It's that time again.
Yes, it is.
It's time to bring you Welcome to Primetime, the Freddy's Nightmares podcast.
Yeah, we're back, and we've got quite an episode today.
Do we?
Just maybe.
Okay, I thought you said we were just going to eat rallies and fall asleep in front of the TV today.
That sounds so enticing right now.
Oh my God, it does, though.
Just pick out a good nap.
Why did I tease us with that kind of promise of joy?
I mean, we have the joy of Freddy's Nightmares to discuss now, so that makes up for it.
That's, I suppose that is true.
In some aspect.
Bitch.
So, today we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 13.
Yes, sir.
Deadline. And for those who are not aware, you can watch that episode for free on Tubi TV.
Yes.
Whether it's on your Roku or your what have you and yada yadas, or TubiTV.com. In the United States, we had a few people say that they can't watch it in other places.
Canada, yeah.
Well, you know, there's a VPN for that, I'm sure.
There's a VPN for that, indeed.
There's a VPN for that. But before we get through all of that, I think it is important that we mention, you know, how was your Christmas, Dave?
My Christmas was great. I enjoyed it with my family. I got to hang out with everybody and just kind of relax a little bit, which was needed. How was yours?
Mine was okay. But did you like the gift I gave you?
Yes.
Yeah?
What was it?
No, that's what I'm asking you. What was the gift? See, so this is my point. David will lie to you people on a moment's notice. We're actually recording this right before Christmas. David will lie at the drop of a hat.
If instructed by you, yeah.
That's even worse.
I know.
You're like, I'm just following orders.
I just jumped off that bridge because you told me to.
Oh, well, speaking of jumping off of things, we'll be getting there in a second. But... Poor Dave just threw him under the bus.
Entirely, but that's I'm used to it by now. It's
I
our
would
friendship.
Hope. I would, well, let's not go crazy.
With those F words.
Exactly. With those F words, like friendship. The only F word I care about is Freddy. And hope you guys listened last week to our interview with Alan Katz.
That was so awesome.
Well-known producer and writer, most famous for his work on Tales from the Crypt,
yep.
But also a writer on several episodes of Freddy's Nightmares.
Yes.
And his writing partner is Gil Adler, the producer behind the entire Freddy's Nightmares series.
And I know we teased it on last week's episode, well, not teased it, but gave you the drive to go ahead and do it again. But if you guys have not checked out the How Not to Make a Movie podcast, we cannot recommend that enough. That was part of the inspiration of us doing this as well, honestly.
Yeah, no, definitely check out How Not to Make a Movie. It's a really cool one. Or Dads from the Crypt.
They're also great.
A great show. So.
Yes.
Yeah, so is there anything else you need to share, David?
Not that I can recall.
Anything else you want to lie about?
No, I think we can dive back into Springwood.
I shouldn't have even called you on it. I should just let that happen so that then your mother could hear it and like your sister went into labor on Christmas Eve. And then she could just be like, wow, David, nothing important happened. It was fine or
whatever.
For
those unaware, which is hopefully all
of you. Why would see, the joke would have been for me to go, oh, they're all aware your sister's pregnant. That would have been the joke.
My sister is currently pregnant with her first child. It is due anytime around Christmas and New Year's. So we are planning to have Christmas at her house this weekend. We're waiting to kind of see what happens.
And I'm all set. I've got frankincense and myrrh.
Oh, there you go.
I'm ready to go.
And Freddy's Nightmare Season 1.
Well, of course. That's the gold.
Because
you bring gold for the child. So the gold is the Freddy's Nightmares. And frankincense and myrrh. Because, I mean, the child will be born under the star of Bethlehem.
Immaculate.
I just hope that manger is nice because we're having a serious winter cold snap and we're talking about the past right now.
Oh my God.
But the predictions earlier today, I was like, holy crap. The high is 9 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
And now I looked at it when we were talking, I was like, oh, it's 4.
It's going to be a single digit Christmas in more ways than one.
Is that a reference to putting your fingers inside your body or what are you talking about?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, on that note,
all right,
we do have an episode of Freddy's Nightmares to talk about.
That we do.
And I have a feeling that you and I are going to have some disagreements here.
Probably, because we discussed off mic, which we try not to do because we try to
leave not to be around you if there's not a podcast.
You know, yeah. On the podcast floor. But yeah, no, I had some discrepancies, but as we say on this podcast all the time, we'll get there.
Well, oh yeah, do we say that all the time?
We do.
Makes sense. That makes sense. So, season one, episode 13, Deadline.
Deadline. Original air date, either January 27th or 29th, 1989. Directed by Michael Lang, who is the same writer as Mother's Day, which I want to say was episode 9. Written by Jill Donner. Now, if you don't recognize that name, Jill Donner wrote 10 episodes of The Incredible Hulk, the Lou Ferrigno show.
Do, 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 do.
Parent Trap 3, do. Which I didn't even know there was a 2.
I knew there was a 2. I didn't know there was a 3.
There's a 3 in the 90s that looks pretty entertaining, I gotta say.
All right, new podcast. Sorry, we're closing shop.
Parent Trap Podcast.
Parent Trap Podcast.
And also had some credits for Star Trek, both Deep Space Nine and Next Generation.
Oh, nice.
So the episode opens with a shot of a car driving at night on a winding road. The driver, first shown to us to be a man in his mid-20s, suddenly changes to Peter, our main character played by Aaron Harnick. Not much on his resume. He only had like 2-3 things, so this was kind of like the biggest thing I could find.
First thing, though.
Yes.
Mid-20s? I was thinking late 30s,
late
early 30s, 40s.
Late 30s, early 40s, I don't know.
Looked at that guy and went, I'm older than that guy? That's what you looked at him? You were like, I, David Neuer, am older than that guy driving that sports car.
I only saw him for all of like 3 to 4 seconds, so maybe mid-20s is a bit kind.
You gotta watch these shows with the eyes and not your ass.
Stop it. All right, mid-20s, mid-30s, he's a gentleman.
He's a gentleman.
He's a gentleman.
He's wearing a monocle.
Monopoly guy. So suddenly, like I said, Peter is in the driver's seat. He turns on the radio and begins to cruise as suddenly he's beginning to be groped by multiple hands.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
So first the driver turns into this young man,
yes,
who will be our main character.
Yes.
Then it's not just that he's getting groped. He's just women's hands start coming,
yeah, coming
out of places.
From behind the seat.
And most shockingly of all, one of them starts changing the radio dial without asking, which is how you know the nightmare has begun.
So
that's my nightmare.
They're feeling them all up all over. We then see hands on the wheel and the pedals of the car, taking Peter's attention off the road. One of the hands presses Peter's foot down onto the gas. And while this is happening, Peter's kind of just in his like own little space. Like he's just enjoying it. Like,
listen,
he's,
are you
beckoning,
gonna act like you're too good to enjoy disembodied hands groping you?
He's beckoning the hands on where to touch him, but the hands can't see because they're hands. That's what I found really funny at one point.
Okay, I'd like to hear what Thing thinks about that.
Oh, have you seen Wednesday?
Every week I see Wednesday.
What I'm talking about, the Netflix series.
No.
Oh, it's good.
I mean, I want to watch it.
It's good.
Where's the time? I have this asshole constantly saying, hey,
bro,
you watch the new Freddy's Nightmares?
You do that shit to me all the time, too. You know what? So, okay, so he's got his, the hands are all over him. Suddenly, like I said, we see one hand pushing his foot down on the gas, and the original gentleman then returns. Peter is out of the picture, and the car zooms off the side of a cliff and then begins to roll no less than 15 times, by the way.
And I just want to say, I feel like we were due for a big car crash on Freddy's Nightmares. It was very satisfying.
Very
crashing
satisfying.
Crashing and crashing and crashing, and then the large collection
Ba-boom.
Of oily rags apparently kept in the trunk because the car just exploded.
That's what we didn't see, was Freddy was just throwing him in the back while he was getting crammed.
You know what I would love to find out?
What?
If we achieve getting Gil Adler on.
Yeah.
I would love to know if they did that stunt for the show or if that was stock footage they bought.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I'll be honest, I wasn't counting on it to explode. I was figuring the roll was going to happen, but I did not expect on the explosion.
Well, if you've already rolled the car exploding, it's actually
easier. Yeah. So the car explodes in a beautiful, beautiful 1989 explosion that you would have for TV. And we cut back to Peter, who's interrupted by Annie, played by Kimiko Gelman, who comes to Freddy's Nightmares with 20 episodes of the show Rags to Riches on her name. The Bold and the Beautiful, CSI Miami, and she also played Venya in Hunger Games. She's letting him know that he's about 2 hours late for their lunch date. Peter apologizes and states he just got caught up in his writing and sometimes loses track of time. We then find out that Peter is using his summer vacation to be a high school intern at the Springwood Star-Times due to the fact that his father is a publisher and made him get the job rather than take the summer off for what was going to be a trip around the world.
Well, he wants to be a writer.
He wants to be a writer, yes.
That's important to point out. So that's why his father thinks it's even more prudent.
Yeah.
This isn't a beefy boy situation.
No.
So much. Like,
yeah.
This is in the wheelhouse of what he wants to do with his life. And I love that he's writing obituaries because I imagine That would be the entry level at Springwood's newspaper.
Springwood Star Times.
And a sweet gig, too. Enter name, then paste, died unexpectedly in their sleep, over and over, and then collect your paycheck.
You know, that is a good point. I didn't even think about that. So he's doing the job, and he tries to argue that Peter would be better off learning about writing here at the paper rather than off on some island. But Peter adds that he doesn't want to write obituaries and would rather write about people, what they see, feel, think, not about their death.
And then they bring up Freddy Krueger.
Yes, they do. So Emily, played by Paige Hannah, she comes to Freddy's nightmare having done Fame, the TV series. She was notoriously Rachel in the Raft segment of Creepshow 2.
So she was the redhead in the Raft segment from Creepshow 2. Creepshow 2, one of my personal favorite horror films of all time. She's the first girl to bite the dust.
And one other notoriety is, do you remember Gremlins 2 when they're doing the tours inside the building and the one chick that's not Phoebe Cates is doing the tours? That's her.
Wow. Yeah. I hope she hears this so she can know, wow, I'm not Phoebe Cates. Thanks, Double D.
So her friend Emily and her friend Star, played by Jolene Ray Harrington, this was like one of the only two, three things on her resume, ask who was it that died. Peter tells them it was Anthony Lawrence. The girls comment on him being that hot guy who works at Springwood Motors who drives a new car every week, to which Peter adds he just took his last drive over 100 miles off the side of a cliff. All three girls comment on what an awful way to go, but Peter, strangely with odd enthusiasm, adds, yeah, can you imagine it?
Yep.
And that visually weirds all of them out before Peter adds, what an awful way to go, all somber like.
Yeah, well, he, you know, you love what you do and do what you love. Exactly. So it's got to be death, you know.
So Annie asks them to change the subject. Peter comments there's nothing to worry about and 16 is too young to die before Annie brings up Freddy Krueger.
And that's my favorite. So they start talking about Freddy. Now, it's important to remember, kids and kittens out there, that Freddy is not dead according to public record.
Correct.
Because there is no public record that he was burned alive and put in a trunk and left in a junkyard.
Yeah, so the group of them comment on how he just disappeared and no one knows what happened. So Peter pulls up Krueger's file on the computer, showing he is still out there till he assures. So he assures the ladies that the file just isn't updated. And with one click, he can make him disappear like yesterday's news, which he does.
He deletes Freddy Krueger's profile from this news, I guess their network?
Network, yeah. I don't
or maybe
what.
Just the one hard drive of information that they have?
So this comforts Annie, who kisses him on the cheek, telling him she'll see him later. We then cut to Freddy's domain, where he has a computer set up, and Freddy sits in front and comments, if our little cub reporter is so bored by this story, I'll give him something that'll really charge him up. And then runs his claws over the keyboard.
And just starts sticking it. And I love that because I was excited to find out that Freddy uses a Hackintosh computer.
I was more so concerned that he has access to the internet where, you know, children and adults and other people like to, you know, have on chat rooms.
I mean, in 1988, barely. Listen, mostly just talking to other nerds.
I just watched Deadly Games, Game Over, recently, and I forgot about that whole segment where the one kid's talking to the Santa Claus on the public message board computer. So yeah, that kind of creeped me out, having that fresh in my mind.
And you just stomp right over my Hackintosh computer joke.
I like your Hackintosh computer joke. My apologies.
I'm just saying, it's a cutting-edge computer.
So we cut back to Peter at the Springwood Star, who's showing the obituary to his boss, Susan, played by Jenny Gago. She was known for General Hospital, The Man with Two Brains, Lonely Guy, and she plays Lupe in Blood In, Blood Out, Bound by Honor.
Oh, yeah.
She's commenting on his writing being effective, but there's no time of death, no cause of death, or funeral information. Peter argues he wanted to go with the more human piece, but Susan comments he's not here to be human. He's here to learn the basics of newspaper writing before handing it back to him with another assignment to work on after he fixes the obituary.
Damn right.
Peter then shows distress as the new assignment and comments that he knew the deceased named Doc Wendell. Susan adds that Anderson will be phoning him with the details soon from the police station, and there's a 2 a.m. deadline for the morning edition, and adds for him to stick to the facts and not get creative. We then see a clock showing just after midnight when Peter has the phone ring off his desk, which is Anderson calling to tell him the coroner's report on Doc Wendell was natural causes so he can go ahead and proceed with the obituary. Peter gets to work typing before laying back on the Peter gets to work typing as we cut to a scene of Doc Wendell lighting a cigar.
And I have to say,
go ahead.
That man lit a cigar
with
an overpowered Bic lighter.
I hated it.
He deserves to die.
I hated it.
He deserves everything he gets.
When I saw the Bic lighter, I was like, yeah, no. No.
Could you just hear me? Like we live like 30 miles apart. Did you hear me go like, ah?
So he lights up his cigar, pours a little cognac in his office before laying back on an exam table as a hot nurse played by Virginia McBrady walks in. The nurse begins to undress and walk over to the doctor, who is now turned into Peter. Oh, yeah.
And this is that trademark Freddy's Nightmare sleaze we come to know and love.
Oh boy, is it. Walks over to Peter. The nurse comments on the doc playing with her heart over and over before opening Peter's chest out and removing his beating heart. And she didn't even say Kali Ma once.
Not even once.
Not even once. Stepping back and holding it in her hand, she comments, there's no cure for a broken heart and nothing can stop the pain. Before we cut back to the real Doc Wendell watching his heart beat in the nurse's hand before dying, the nurse comments, how does it feel getting a taste of your own medicine?
And, great pun, I really want to point out how awesome the swapping is. Because literally, in case we're not getting it across perfectly, what's happening is the characters are some actor. And then through camera trickery, he changes into our main character and then changes back at the end.
Yep.
So it's like our main character is experiencing the death, but he leaves right before the actual death happens.
Yeah. Which reminds me, there was a show. Did you ever see the show Dead Like Me? The Showtime show. Do you remember the one episode when the main character was supposed to go collect the soul and didn't? So that guy gets sent to the autopsy and then they go to retrieve the soul after.
I love Dead Like Me.
Oh, it's so good. That's still holds
such
up.
A good show. But we're not talking about that good show. We're talking about a great show.
So we are back at Springwood Star as Peter is awoken by Anderson, who's played by Dan Garrity. He was a TV guy known for stuff like Night Court, Dallas, and one of my personal favorites, Grounded for Life.
I did love Grounded for Life with Donald Logue.
Yes. He's asking for the obituary. Peter shows him the obituary and compliments Peter for making the deadline. The next day, Annie and Peter are walking as Peter tries to explain what happened in writing the doc's obituary and how he swapped places and that it really scared him. Annie comments it's a great story, which angers Peter, who asks why does she think that he'd make that up. Annie then comments it would be a good way for his father to make him think he's gone crazy so that he could take his trip and get away from Springwood, but most importantly, her.
Ooh.
Sick burn. So Peter walks off angrily, telling her that she can probably still catch up with her friends at the mall, but Annie chases after him, apologizing that she's worried about losing him. She then tells him he better get back to work before but they have a movie date that night at 8, so she'll pick him up at 7:30. Peter doesn't answer and walks off, so we go back to the Star office. Susan gives Peter another obituary to write while Peter begs for another assignment. Susan then comments
a different
assignment. She comments that he should use his opportunity to learn from experienced writers and that getting an A in creative writing doesn't make you the next Ernest Hemingway, adding, but he was also a real hell of a reporter.
He was a hell of a reporter. Now, I want to mention, you got to take that boss seriously. I mean, she's got shoulder pads and the sleeves of her sports coat are rolled up. That tells you. Girl boss level.
Oh, period. Means business.
Oh, yeah.
Means business.
I mean, my goodness.
So Peter sits back down to type up the next obituary that turns out to be an abducted bank manager named Mr. Finney. Once again, Peter is suddenly transported now into a room where he's bound to gag like Finney was, and the kidnappers are telling him that they've sent the ransom to Finney's son, but his son came back with a new offer for the ransom. The kidnapper, played by Jeremy Roberts, 113 acting credits
on this guy. He is one of those serious, like... guys that's in that thing kind of people. He is a character actor through and through and through.
Yeah. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, The Mask, Money Train, The Mexican, Malcolm in the Middle. That was just even a few I could find of notoriety.
That were just started with M's.
Just M's,
Yeah.
So tells Peter they're going to have to go for the old pound of flesh payment, literally. Peter begins to flip out.
No, you mean pound of flesh, not pounding flesh.
Pound of flesh.
Okay.
Pounding flesh.
That was a little worrisome.
I think the sound should go there. Oh. Pounding flesh. There we go.
So, first of all, never request a sound effect again.
Oh, that's the second time I've done it. I'll do more. Don't worry.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say.
Yeah.
I'm really just glad to see that there's organized crime in Springwood.
In Springwood. Like, there's honestly, everything else. Why not?
I was starting to worry that there were no gangsters there. Thank goodness.
I want to see the organized crime have the bad dreams, because I feel like Freddy would have some fun with that.
Well, homie, we've got like 30 more episodes to go. It's gonna have to happen. It has to happen.
So, tells Peter they're gonna go for the old pound of flesh payment, literally. Peter begins to flip out as they talk about fingers, but the police would have to identify them, or maybe an arm, and the kidnapper rips Peter's shirt, revealing a dollar sign tattoo. Suddenly, the kidnapper takes out a knife, slicing the skin with the tattoo on it, but Peter has now turned back into Mr. Finney. Peter comes to as Anderson is on his shoulder, asking for Finney's obituary, which he hands him. Peter then begins to clean his desk out before Susan walks over with another assignment.
And her sleeves still rolled up.
Sleeves still rolled up. And this has an even more quick deadline because it's for the evening edition. It's a simple suicide, as she claims. Peter tries to quit and walk out, but Susan tells him that she and his father have other plans for him, stating she's going to run his obituaries in a special box on the front page, experience the fear and pain of death with none of the hassles without ever having to leave the comfort of your living room. But Peter interrupts by quitting and walking out.
Or does he?
Or does he? So we cut back to the Springwood Star as Peter is brought into the office by two cops who shove him into a cell where his desk is, locking him up. Peter then tells Susan he didn't steal anything, but she comments when he left the office, he tried to steal a very valuable piece of office equipment, that wonderfully creative mind of his.
Oh, yeah. And now his nightmare has become a reality in that now they want his morbid obituaries full of details and intrigue and sex.
So Susan tells him she needs him to write one final piece and then he can go. Peter states that she can't keep him locked up in here forever. Susan comments, not forever, just till deadline.
What?
Peter looks outside the cell to see a man sitting at a desk rolling dice into a large board game called the Ladder of Success. Suddenly, he's transported into the board game, climbing up on a platform which is shaped like a cardboard building. He picks up a card that reads Loan Due. He comments he can't pay it unless the bank can make another loan, whereas a dark hooded figure at the other end holding two large die shakes his head no. So Peter requests another throw of the dice. The dice are thrown and Peter climbs a ladder onto the platform, revealing a second card that says foreclosure. Peter comments that he's bankrupt before ascending another ladder to another platform and reveals that a card says jump.
And I want to say, a living board game.
Living board game.
What a delightful and whimsical way to encourage suicide.
So he holds up the sign says and it says jump. He looks down at the figure, shaking his head yes. Peter ascends the final ladder to the top, showing a really cool shot that now he's on the top rung of the ladder and the board game is back in the Star office as usual. I thought that was really cool.
No, I liked it. I actually liked this sequence quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because the kind of, for lack of a better term, the financially challenged set decorations actually work really well for a fake board game, like for a giant board game.
Yeah.
I actually really like that you said that that looks like a cardboard building. It's like, it doesn't look like one.
It is.
It is a cardboard building.
So the hooded figure is suddenly next to him at the top of the ladder, shakes his head yes, as we cut to a window. Was it like fake money or checks? What did you think was blowing out of it?
I thought it was money.
I thought it was like looking like fake money, which might have been the intent of real money, so who knows. So he's out this window, money is just pouring out of it, and as Peter stands on the ledge, ready to jump, Annie pops in telling him it's 7:30 and time to return to the land of the living. She pulls him back into the window, which then reveals that Peter is at his desk, no cage anymore, and you have Susan and Anderson behind them talking, so none of that actually happened, apparently.
Which is shocking. You would think that the giant board game was real. Yeah. How is that a dream?
Crazy. Huh. So that was all a dream. Peter argues that he has to finish writing this obituary before Annie hits the delete key, erasing the screen on what he was typing. Peter then begins to freak out, stating he's dead, he can't make deadline, before Susan and Anderson interrupt him, stating he doesn't have a deadline. Finney, Anderson took over Finney's obituary when they arrested Finney's kidnappers. Peter comments that he's going to be stuck on the ledge and jump instead of the millionaire from the obituary. Susan tells Peter to go home and get some rest while Anderson advises Annie to take him out for a night on the town, let him relax, forget a bit.
Yeah, yeah, go out, have a few laughs, you know?
Have a nice nap.
Yeah, have a good sleep and such.
As Peter leaves, Anderson comments that Peter's imagination will be the death of him. Peter and Annie walk towards the elevators, commenting on how he needs to take it easy and nothing bad will happen unless the elevator magically drops 20 floors. Peter excuses himself as the door is shut, stating he left his wallet and keys in the office and he'll meet her in the lobby. He then goes out to the stairwell, looking down, and begins to hear the board game tune and imagines the bottom of the streetscape before plummeting to the floor and to his death.
And the street he's looking at is, I think it's on purpose that it looks old.
Old, yeah.
Because it's clearly footage from like the 1970s rooftop, maybe even 60s, and it looks all film grainy and stuff. At first I thought it was lazy stock footage, but I think it was supposed to look out of place.
Yeah.
Either that or they just spent all the money on that car they blew up. So
Annie rushes to his side, but of course it's too late. Peter has passed.
Oh, he's dead as a door fuck.
A story ends as Freddy sits sipping a margarita in his domain, stating, "Here today, deadline the manana." Before disappearing and laughing.
Oh, I'm so glad Freddy spoke some Spanish.
I was like, I watched that when I was like, what?
He was wearing like a straw hat and stuff. Like he was just like getting ready to go to the DR for a weekend.
So the B story begins as we are treated to a very fiery scene as an unseen woman races out of a circle of flames before we cut to a newspaper showing co-ed students die in fiery car crash.
And they mentioned that they heard about it on Good Morning Springwood.
Good Morning Springwood,
which the jokes just write themselves.
We've got to. I want
morning,
to know
Springwood.
If we're going to see Good Morning Springwood, and I have a feeling we will.
Well, I mean, and talk about like an easy accomplishment. I mean, whenever you wake up, it's a good morning in Springwood.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's totally fair.
I'm just being straight with you.
So we then see Emily, Annie's friend from the original story.
Yes, the one who you may have known from Creepshow 2.
Yes. Played as being awoken by her father, who's played by Shelley Kurtz. He was in Batteries Not Included, and he played Itzel on a couple episodes of The Goldbergs.
Oh, okay.
He kisses her awake and tells her good morning. She then opens a drawer to reveal a paper with crash information on it, which is the article that we saw before. Emily then sits with her mother and her father at the breakfast table. Her mother, played by Rebecca Stanley, she had a resume of Eyes of Fire, Body Double, Moonlighting, so she had some stuff on there as well. They sit at the breakfast table, but Emily isn't showing much of an appetite. Her father comments it's probably due to the sleep meds the doctor has her on, and Emily asks how long she has to be on them. Her mother says that she needs her sleep, to which her father adds, yeah, but she needs to eat too. Emily then comments on the plastic flowers on the table, stating that Star and Annie would have loved them at their funerals before her mom interrupts her, trying to give her more pills, saying that if she's asleep, she won't feel so upset. Emily comments, but she also doesn't feel anything on the pills.
And I say, leave it to Freddy's nightmares to tackle the over-medication of America's youth. I mean, there is an element of that, though, because she's like clearly a zombie from the medicine, and they would rather make her a zombie than deal with her emotional problems.
Yeah.
So I know that there's a lot of fun to be had. Every episode of Freddy's Nightmares is pretty damn cheap, and clearly, you know, at the best, they're getting three drafts, you know, at best.
That's fair.
That's not an insult. I mean, I've made movies for, you know, I guarantee most of my films don't even have the sandwich budget of Freddy's Nightmares. So there's nothing wrong with not having a lot of money to do the job. But that being said, every now and then these surprise me with having something smart and poignant in there, like the over-medication of their daughter, or last week's episode with the whole nuclear war thing. The Bride Wears Red had a lot to say about commitment and all these things.
And all that stuff,
And then, of course, the first episode has a lot to say about Miranda rights and child murderers. Child hungry murderers. No, so I'm just saying, like, every now and then Freddy's Nightmares pops one out.
No, they really do.
And in this one, I really felt oddly affected by seeing her just kind of choking down those pills and looking like a zombie, and her parents being like, no, you just keep going.
Yeah.
And her saying, I don't feel anything.
Well, and what we'll get to in a second too is like, when you get the feeling that this is the only glimpse of her home life that we're going to see, it's really sad.
There's a lot of that in Freddy's Nightmares too. Just really sad home lives.
So Emily comments she doesn't feel anything before taking the pills. We then cut to a nightclub scene. And by a nightclub, I mean we're in a dark room with neon lights and smoke.
We are clearly in a dream nightclub.
Dream club.
Like we're not supposed to be fooled into thinking this is an actual nightclub.
Yeah.
It's like a nightclub if it were a nightclub set on a play.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's just black walls, black curtains, yeah, a couple tables, people dancing, stuff like that. Very out there. This one, and last week's did it a little bit too. Or no, last week's did it too, with the mother dying and everything.
Yeah.
There's this element that's almost Twin Peaks-ish.
Oh, definitely.
And I can't help but notice that.
Yeah. No, it, like, what I liked about this scene was that you immediately got an uneasy feeling, because just with having the dream aesthetic as we've gotten used to, but also just there's something not right about what we just saw going into this.
Correct.
So they come to the nightclub scene with Annie, Star, and Emily. They're wandering around looking for Peter, but before Emily tells Annie that he's not there because he's dead, Emily then wanders through a door into the club and comes to a bedroom with flames like placed around it before a shadowed figure asks her.
Flame with...
like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, they're not barrel, but like
they're, no,
candles.
They're like decorative flames.
Yes.
They're like decorative... I mean, it is weird. I don't know exactly the word. They're like decorative torches.
Decorative
really.
Torches. That's a good
so
point.
So, you know, you're like, they're flames everywhere. No, that comes
that
later.
That comes later and the beginning already.
Well, yeah.
So, a shadowed figure asks her, isn't this exactly what you dreamed? The figure takes Emily's hand and leads her to a bed before laying her down on it. Emily is now wearing a blood red dress before a mysterious man disappears, startling her awake.
But you missed the most important thing.
What's that?
We do see him a little bit.
But yeah.
And he's got a ponytail. He speaks very softly. You know this guy's going for Steven Seagal style, right?
It's what it
no,
seems
in 1988,
like.
89?
Yeah.
Like, no, that guy saw Steven Seagal and was like, yeah, I'm going to go for that. Which, you know, which then wasn't as hilarious as it would be if he was doing it now.
That's fair.
I'm just saying.
No, I mean, he definitely had that look going and that speech going. But again, we'll get there. So Emily is awakened, and she is now at a slumber party with Annie and Star. They give her crap about falling asleep at the slumber party. Annie then takes out her diary as a picture falls out as they try to pull it away from her. They ask if this is her mystery man, to which Emily states yes, and his name is Johnny.
Ooh.
Emily is slightly embarrassed till Annie talks about the emotions that she is feeling as normal, because that's what Peter did for her. Emily also adds she hasn't introduced him to her parents yet because the fear of them being upset of her dating an older gentleman.
Yes, he's much older, apparently.
So the girls lay back down as Freddy emerges then from a sleeping bag, holding...
But there's something more important than this.
Oh, is there?
The girls' sleeping bags are a French flag.
Oh, you're right. I didn't even think about that.
The colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a French flag. I just, as I sit in my living room,
yeah,
calmly drinking a Fresca at 1 a.m, watching the show and writing notes, those are the kinds of things that really stick with me.
Out
I'm like,
with you.
That's a French flag.
Yep.
But now we are about to get into truly,
yes,
one of my favorite, most bizarre moments ever.
So the girls lay back down, and suddenly Freddy sits up in a sleeping bag similar to theirs, holding a similar diary to Emily's, stating, look what I found. The book then bursts open with flames as Freddy states, ooh, some real hot stuff in here. All about her dream lover, a real lady killer.
And
he states that before laying back down and reading it laughing.
And so the book bursts into flames. I just want to point out that that's literally a gag you buy at a magic shop.
Yeah.
And that only made it more charming to
for
me.
Him, yeah, especially.
No, just entirely.
In
like, that's literally, it's a book with pieces of flash paper, and there's basically a lighter that you flick to,
yeah,
make it burst into flames. But I also want to point out, I mean, would it even be an 80s girl slumber party without Freddy Krueger?
That's fair.
I mean, IRL, like in the 80s, teenage girls were like watching Freddy Krueger movies if they were having slumber parties,
right? I just
right?
loved how closely they were sitting to the fireplace. Like the raging fireplace.
It must have been very cold. They were extremely close to the fireplace. And I mean, I was worried it was going to be like burning a French flag. Oh my God. They were a French flag. It's crazy.
The next day, the three girls wander outside discussing a party before setting up for a picnic. Emily adds she probably won't be going as she's going to try to take Johnny out. Star asks if she can bring him along, and Emily says that she wants to be alone, but Star and Annie are annoyed as they feel like she doesn't want to hang out with them anymore. Star gets up and walks away before disappearing right before Emily's eyes. Annie then gets up to leave, commenting maybe she's just not their friend anymore. But Emily argues that she'll always be their friend and she'll always hear for them. And then Annie gets up and walks away and also disappears right before her eyes as well. Emily begins to pluck flower petals, stating, "He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me." Suddenly, she's back in the dream bedroom with Johnny, who is played by Timothy Brantley. He only had like two other things on his resume and I didn't recognize
him. Yeah, because Steven Seagal kicked him in the throat and killed him for taking his style.
That could have been what happened.
You think you can be me? You can't be me. You gonna eat that? Oh, God, yeah. So anyway, this man is in her bedroom.
Yes. And he's asking her again if that's what she wants, to be with her friends for always. Emily questions, and Johnny states that he has to be sure if she's ready. And Emily adds she is before being awoken by Star and Annie, who are having a picnic again. They comment that she was snoring and must have not gotten enough sleep. Neither did they, and she missed a great party, they comment.
Oh, yeah.
Star adds their folks freaked out when they heard about the accident. Star asks Emily about Johnny, but Emily interrupts asking about what accident, which angers Star and Annie because they think that she doesn't want to tell them about Johnny.
Yes. She thinks she's changing the subject, is what they think. Yeah.
So they walk off before adding, if she wants to be alone, then she can be all alone. Emily tries to chase after them, but the walkway that they're walking down suddenly extends, and Emily is back in her bedroom now, which has a giant fireplace as well, by the way.
Oh, my, yes.
As Johnny appears behind a curtain on the balcony, he comes in stating he didn't mean to scare her and that he just had to get away for a while and didn't want her to worry, but also didn't want to give an itinerary of his whole life.
That's a Chad move right there. Listen, babe, I can't just tell you everywhere I am. I have to go and wrestle a bear with Putin.
So he states that he heard about the accident and doesn't want her to feel guilty. Emily questions guilty about what, and Johnny states being alive. He then tells her that he can come back and give her everything he wants if she'll just give him a chance before kissing her and handing over a rose before he leaves. Emily then makes her way downstairs to hear her parents discussing her. As she walks up to them, they're stating that she's going to get on with her life so they can get on with theirs. Emily tries to talk to them, but they don't acknowledge her. Like, she's trying to get their attention, and she's right in front of them, and it's just like a Christmas carol. Like, they're not.
Yeah, it's like she's not there at all. I mean, which is, you know, kind of par for the course of parents in Springwood. It's like, yeah, you're dying in your sleep or whatever. Well, eight of my friends just died in their sleep. Yeah, you need to get some sleep.
So her mother comments that Emily cannot accept Annie and Star's deaths and that she loved them more than her own family. She adds that she thinks she wants to be dead so she can be with her friends again. Emily watches as her father consoles her mother before waking back up in the bed to the sound of Johnny's voice. He tells her he promised he would return and kisses her, stating she couldn't get rid of her.
She could never get rid of her.
Yeah, if he tried, and to get ready because they're going on a date and she needs to be dressed nice and ready when he returns.
I like that he says, I'll be back in a little while.
Yeah.
Don't make me wait.
Well, he also says, no jeans or t-shirt.
Yeah,
I want
no
you to
jeans.
Look nice.
Yeah, but I like that he says, I'll be back in a while. I don't want to wait. It's like, well, you're not very specific about when you're coming
back.
So, I mean, if you said an hour, you said 2 hours.
Yeah.
Well, you say, I'll be back in a little while. I hate waiting. Well, okay, I guess that's fine.
So Emily questions where they're going. Johnny tells her she doesn't need to know until it's time. Emily puts on a black outfit as her father enters, showing support for her clothes and her makeup, saying she looks beautiful and he likes to see her getting back to her old self.
Dave, you're such a man.
How am I such a man?
She's wearing a little black dress that's strapless.
Yes.
Just said she's wearing like a black outfit.
I said black outfit.
You should have just said black uniform. She's wearing a black uniform, you know.
Black strapless dress and makeup. There you
Yes,
happy?
She looked like a beautiful young woman.
Yes, she did. She did. And he begs, and so her father thinks the same thing. He begs Emily to find something to live for while he hugs her and wishes her a good night. Emily sits down at her mirror and gets a call from Annie, who tells Emily that she's going to pick her up at 8 and it'll be fun.
Oh, and boy, will it be fun.
Boy, howdy, will it. So the next scene, Annie rolls up outside and hugs Emily, who can't believe she's alive. She asks Annie why she didn't tell her she's alive, and Annie tells her that she didn't want to say anything, but when she heard what Emily had done, she knew she had to come back for her.
Oh, of course.
They get in the car and find Star in the backseat as well. Annie comments that they can leave Springwood, get an apartment on the beach, but Emily states she doesn't want to leave Springwood and needs to get back inside because Johnny is coming soon. Emily tries to go out the door, but the door is locked. Annie comments that she can't leave and go back. None of them can. Crash and burn is forever.
And I want to point out something.
Yes.
I love that Freddie just enjoy so much poking and prodding at sweet, sweet trauma. Like, oh, your friends died in an accident? Well, don't worry. They also thought you hated them. Like, that's literally what is happening, really though. It's like, oh, your friends died? Well, they also knew you hated them.
Oh, jeez. He's a bastard.
I mean, yeah. Is that, are you new? First time?
I might be.
Oh, God. At this point? You don't have that new smell, I'll tell you that much.
So, she comments again, crash and burn is forever. Just ask Star. Emily turns to watch Star change from her beautiful self to a charred, grinning corpse.
Yes.
In the back seat. Suddenly, flames shoot up outside the car as Emily begins to panic. She's beating on the glass, trying for the door, and she looks back to see Annie has now turned into a charred skeleton.
And the fire is just zooming around the car.
Outside the house.
Outside the windows. Yeah, you're just seeing fire. And I gotta say, the burn makeup and the fire reveals were absolutely top-notch.
Top-notch.
Super scary.
Yeah, no, it
I
was
I really
intense.
Found them creepy. Yeah, very much.
So, she's a skeleton now. Emily pushes the door open suddenly and runs out through the flames, escaping the car, just like we saw in the opening scene of the B-story. She then runs into Johnny and states that she was supposed to die in the car crash, but she didn't, and Star and Annie have come back for her. Johnny states, "They didn't come back for you. I'm the one who's come for you." And he suddenly has a very Freddy-esque tone in his voice.
Oh, he's Freddy's voice. He has Freddy's voice, because of course he is Freddy, which would make sense. He is then a much older man.
Yes.
But unfortunately, if he's Freddy, that makes her a bit on the old side for him.
It does indeed. Oh my God.
What? I'm sorry. Did you not want to do a show about a child murderer rapist?
So
I'm asking you a question, David.
I'm rolling
bitch,
through.
Bitch.
Suddenly, we're in a mortuary as Johnny has Emily on his table, stating he's going to give her what she really wants. Johnny then gets to work putting makeup on Emily, and he's also draining her body on the table as well, showing her what dress he's going to put her in, and states for eternity.
And you know, I thought he was pretty weird, but for a mortician, he's actually a pretty average guy.
Completely what you would expect. Yeah, when they revealed him as the mortician, I was like, ah, this makes sense.
That dude is having the time of his friggin' life.
Laughing
he's just, like,
maniacally.
Laughing, giggling, running his hands up and down. Yeah. Her straddling the casket as it's being pushed into a fire. Like, it is completely nuts. I love it.
And as if things couldn't get any weirder, so Johnny then shows Emily's parents in, showing his handiwork on Emily for her funeral. Now, Emily is protesting at this point and suddenly states that she's not dead and she wants to say goodbye to her family. Johnny,
or at least tell them she loves them.
Or tell them she loves them, yeah. Johnny then tells her they never listened and they can't hear her. And like Henrik said, suddenly Johnny is now sitting on top of Emily's casket that's going into the flames of the mortuary, commenting her diary entry stating how she missed her friends and wished she could be with them. Emily tells Johnny that she doesn't want to die and she wants to live. The casket goes into the fire and suddenly we're back at the breakfast table.
No, the casket does not go into the fire. The casket goes into the fire! Into the fire!
That's appropriate. I like that. Good touch.
So suddenly, I apologize. Everybody.
Emily is transported back to the breakfast table with her dad, revealing everything after the pill was just a dream.
And it what a dream.
What a dream indeed. So we then cut to the end of the B story as Freddy is also surrounded by flames, laughing and states, Some books you just can't put down because they never end. Before tossing Emily's diary into the fire. And that is episode.
Before tossing her
into the fire.
Thank you.
And that is Deadline.
So Freddy just taught this young lady a valuable lesson.
A very comparison to Mother's Day, the end of Mother's Day.
Sometimes Freddy, I guess, you know, there were already like three dead teenagers, so he was happy.
he was
sated for the day.
I already met my quota.
But I do have to wonder, like, why didn't Freddy kill her?
Yeah.
Like, it seems kind of stupid.
It kind of does. Well, now we get to ask him, because why wouldn't we?
Great! Freddy's here again. You know how great this always turns out.
Terrible.
Hey, bitches.
Hey, Freddy.
How's it going?
You don't care. I know you don't.
Yeah, you're going to say it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Oh, sorry. I wasn't listening.
Yeah, that checks out. So, well, Freddy, since you're here, I guess we could ask you a question.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Freddy, at the end of Deadline, why didn't you kill the girl?
I killed him.
No, the other end of Deadline.
Oh, I never watched the B story.
That tracks.
That makes sense. That makes sense, but that seems kind of shitty. But
really,
okay.
Really shitty.
Okay. But why didn't you kill the girl at the end of that story?
Oh, I didn't realize I was your dancing monkey, here to amuse you, do whatever you want me to do.
I mean, the show has your name on it. I feel like you should have some input.
And it's literally for entertainment value.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Should I make a pun, too? Maybe I don't feel like it. Maybe I have a life of my own. Did you ever consider that?
No.
Not even vaguely.
Not even close.
You guys are dicks.
Yeah.
Dave is definitely a dick.
I'll accept that.
So, well, Freddie, do you have anything to say about this episode?
Fuck you.
That's also tracks.
That's pretty mean, Freddie.
Oh, Freddie.
Well, before you go, is there anything else you want to share?
You guys have New Year's resolutions?
Oh, no.
Huh?
Do you, Henrik?
I was going to try to take more time for myself.
What about you, Dave? Anything less homosexual?
I'm going to try to get more guests for the podcast, people that might know you.
You have a podcast?
I have a podcast.
Damn, Freddie's freaking brutal today.
He's a dick.
Yeah, no shit. Well, what about you, Freddie? Do you have a New Year's resolution?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to lose weight.
Oh. All right, well.
All right,
thanks, Freddie.
Yeah, eat a dick.
Bye, Freddie.
Bye, Freddie.
You know,
he seemed kind of mad. I thought he was kind of in on the show because he would come and make jokes and stuff like that. But I guess he's sensitive.
He had a bad Christmas.
I mean, he must love Christmas. He wears the sweater every day.
That is true.
So, all right. So that's the end of Deadline.
So next week's episode, by the way, is we are going to be getting a visit from a Mr. Brad Pitt.
Who?
Appearing in season 1, episode 14, Black Tickets, directed by George Katzenberg, the director of Bride Who Wore Red.
Ooh, I like the Bride Who Wore Red.
So that might be a very good one.
So, Brad who?
Brad Pittis.
Pittis?
Pittis.
Okay. Well, this is the first really big star.
That I can think of,
I mean, we've had a few. Lori Petty's decent-sized star.
Petty, yeah.
What was the name of the gentleman who starred in the Beefy Boy episode?
Oh, John Cameron Mitchell.
Yeah, he's also a pretty big star, big star.
Yeah.
So,
but no, fun story real quick.
No, it's not going to be fun, everybody.
When I was doing the notes on this episode, I unfortunately dozed off, and my Tubi decided to go into the next episode, so when I woke back up, I thought this was episode 13. And so I have pieces of both this episode and next week's episode.
Wait, this was episode 13?
13.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
Be careful with what you say, man.
I gotta be careful. Gotta be careful of that. But no, that was an interesting thing, because when my Tubi popped up then with the menu, I was like, wait, episode? Oh, crap.
I like that you're so unprofessional. You're just falling
just
asleep,
falling asleep
while you're
during
watching,
a Freddy program.
Which is already dangerous enough. Did you learn nothing? Falling asleep.
You've got to wonder, for the people that have nightmares about Freddy every now and then, if they wonder if this is the real time.
I mean, when you're 11 and stuff, for sure. So one time, I don't know if I've told this story on the show, I used to get in trouble because I would have kids over for sleepovers when I was like 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
And I would show them Freddy Krueger movies,
yeah,
which they were not
me.
A lot. Did I ever tell you about the one kid that I, after we watched, I think it was part 4, I put on my Freddy glove and just like turned to him and went like, and just said like, you know, come here. And he screamed his head off. Ran out of my bedroom and ran past my mom, who was watching TV in the living room, and tried to get out of the front door.
Oh my God.
And my mom was like, what is going on? And I was like, I scared him with Freddy. And my mom was like, I'm going to get a call about this.
Yep.
And luckily that kid's parents did not give a crap about him. So we never heard anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a really funny story. And you're a terrible person.
I didn't know he was going to be that scared.
The only
David.
One that I can compare to that is when I was in high school, we had like a backyard movie at my parents' house when I was living there at the time, of course. And right along the backside of their house, there's a little like section of woods in one of our neighbor's yards. So what I did was we were watching Halloween in the backyard. I had my Michael Myers outfit. I ran to the other side of the street with it like in a bag, got into the woods, put it on, and then walked the path to my parents' backyard and came out right by my friends and scared the shit out of them.
I just imagine you and your Michael Myers mask like coming out of the woods like, and they're like, is that you, Dave?
No. I'm the shirt, guys.
Tell you what, if you ever want to do something that's mildly entertaining and very easy to access, just go on Google and
well,
type
sell
in,
it harder, Dave.
Go on Google and type in bad Michael Myers mask. You'll be entertained
hours. Even the official Michael Myers masks were painful.
Some of them look pretty bad.
Yeah, no. Yeah, let's shit on Michael Myers for like the rest of
the Freddy podcast.
On the Freddy podcast. I'm sure Freddy would be thrilled. He's like, yeah, that guy sucks.
Oh, man.
So anyway, my friends, we're about to get out of here, but I want to remind you all that you can email us at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com.
Oh,
yes.
We need to rate this episode.
Ow, let's rate it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I cut you my nail.
Don't touch me.
So
cut your damn nails,
all right,
nails,
so Freddy's interactions, again, minimal at best, but pretty top. Pretty top notch, I would
say. I mean, him popping up from a girl's slumber party is pretty classic.
So with the story, like you said, discrepancies on my end. I thought the B story had great ideas, but it just kind of felt muddled in its execution.
Okay.
But that said, I would
Dave,
still
be a dick. I know you want to be.
I would still give this a solid C, C plus.
Whoa. See, I would give it a B minus. Because I liked the concept of the deadline and him swapping bodies with people that are dying a lot.
Yeah.
But I really liked the weird, confusing nature of the second half.
I will say, yeah.
And the payoff with the fire and the charred corpses and all of that. I think that brought it up to a B minus from a C plus for me.
That's fair. I think my biggest issue with the B story was that it... It was the same thing that happened in Mother's Day with the morality tale, which I don't mind, but also that made it a little bit more stressful in regards of going through the story with all the visuals and having that be the payoff, in my opinion.
So you heard it here first. Dave is mad a child didn't die.
I wanted the comeuppance of the child. Yes, that's exactly
the comeuppance of wanting your friends to be alive. Wow. Dave's like, she should get what she deserves.
Get what she deserves. All right. That's my final word.
Okay. Well, we're going to get out of here, but I want to remind you that you've been listening to Welcome to Primetime, a Freddy's Nightmares retrospective podcast. If you'd like to send us a message, you know, reach out and cut someone, email us at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. And we're going to be having some more guests in the very near future. I'm really excited about that, but we don't want to talk about it just yet.
Not yet.
So until next time, we'll be back in Springwood this time next week. So be well. And Dave, you have the final unfortunate word.
Goodbye.
Great one.